How many of you have ever been the new kid? Anyone? When I was in eighth grade, we moved to North Carolina. Actually, it was just my mother, my brother, and me. My father had still a month left at the church where he was before he moved up there with us. And so on that first day of school, my mother, who was teaching at another school, had to drop me off very early. And so I went in there to the courtyard where all the students were gathering, found a brick wall, and stood on it all by myself. Now, if you know me, you know that is an utter nightmare for me to be in a crowd of people and know no one. I can't stand that. I mean, like, I have to talk to somebody. I was just there talking to myself, feeling very unloved, unwelcomed, and unaccepted. Nobody knew who I was. Nobody really wanted to know who I was. They were all seeing each other for the first time in a few months. And there I was, all alone. I was glad when the bell rang that morning, because then at least I could go somewhere and I would knew where, you know, where I would know that I was supposed to be there. And so it was a little better for a while, but then lunch came around. Now, if you've ever been the new kid at school, you know lunch on that first day is the worst part. I mean, it's like every prison movie that you've ever seen, where a person walks into the front, standing up there, having no idea where to sit. Because it's very important where you sit in middle school and high school. Am I right? Middle school, high school students? Yes. It hadn't changed that much. Because everybody's divided, right? You've got the cool kids over here, and then the almost cool kids, wannabe cool kids, sort of nearby. Then you've got the athletes. They're kind of divided by their sport over here and over there. You've got the freaks and the geeks and the rednecks and the golf people. You know, schools haven't changed that much over time, right? I mean, everybody has their own clique. But the thing is, when you're a new kid, it's not like there's a big sign that says, this is where those people sit. And so you could commit social suicide on the very first day if you go and sit in the wrong place. You know, it would be bad enough if you went there and somebody said, seat's taken. That would be horrible. But if you go and sit with the wrong people, well, that's your crowd for the rest of your educational career. That could be horrible to sit with the wrong people. But that's exactly what we find in today's gospel reading. Jesus is sitting with the wrong people. It begins with him coming up to the tax booth and running into a guy named Matthew and saying, follow me. And Matthew gets up and follows him. Now, you need to know a little bit about tax collectors in those days. I mean, some things never changed. Does anybody really like the tax collector now? I mean, thankfully, there aren't people that we call tax collectors, but, you know, no one's like, all right, it's April 15th. I can't wait to send off all my money. It's never been that way. But at least the money that we pay in taxes goes to our own home, our own town, our own state, our own country. That's not the way it was in Jerusalem. See, they were paying Roman taxes. So all the money that they were putting into the pot was not staying in Jerusalem. It was being taken off to Rome to build aqueducts and big coliseums and things like that. It was money that they were giving up that they would never see again. To make matters worse, these tax collectors, they weren't Romans. They weren't people that Rome sent in to take these collections. No, no, no. They were Jews. And so they were taking money for Rome from their own people. And not only were they doing that, not only were they basically turning their back on their faith and their people, they were also hiking up the prices to make a little profit for themselves. So needless to say, these folks were not invited to many tables. You know, they were about the most hated people in the entire land. But Jesus goes up and calls one to follow him. To make matters worse, then he goes and he has dinner with a bunch of tax collectors and sinners. Now, we don't know what these sinners did or who they are, but what we know is this. For you to be lumped in the group of sinners, you ain't a good person. You know, you are an outcast. People at church, they don't want to have you around. You probably were not welcome in the temple. And so that's who Jesus is hanging out with. But see, Jesus was a little bit different than most. It would be like, you know, a famous movie star coming to your school, and that's his or her first day. Everybody's going to want that person to sit with them, right? Well, the Pharisees, they were like, well, you know, he's a religious leader. He ought to be sitting with us. What's he doing with them? You know, he's with the wrong people. Those aren't the kind of folks that religious people ought to be with. If he's who he says he is, he's who people are talking about, he's this guy from God, why is he with those people? Jesus responds to him, I didn't come for those who were healthy, I came for those who were sick. They're the ones that need a physician. Learn what this means. I desire mercy, not sacrifice. Well, then about that time, a leader of the synagogue comes up and says to Jesus, my daughter's just died. I need your help. Imagine how desperate this guy must have been to come to Jesus to say, please help me. So Jesus and his disciples, they get up and go on the way. And along the way, they encounter this woman, or rather this woman encounters them, who says to herself, you know, if I just touch the fringe of his cloak, then I'm going to be healed. She had been bleeding for 12 years. That's a long time to be suffering. Then he comes to this little girl's house, and there's flute players outside. That's what they would do in that culture. Anytime someone died, they would call in the flute players to basically play mourning songs. And he said, yo, I don't know why you're here. She's just asleep. And they laughed at him. And he went inside and he raised her from the dead. Now, when we were talking about this in our staff meeting earlier this week, Deacon Deborah said, these are great stories, but what in the world do they have to do with each other? It's a good question. What do they have to do with each other? Well, here's the answer. In Jesus' day, the people that you didn't associate with were sinners and tax collectors. Pretty obvious. But also people who were unclean. Anyone who had any sort of bleeding involved, any sores, menstrual periods, anything, were considered ritually unclean. They were not allowed to go to the temple. They couldn't go to church. In fact, women during that time of the month were sent out of town to be in their own little commune. And if that's the kind of bleeding she had been there for 12 years. And for her to make physical contact with Jesus was not only inappropriate because she was a woman and he was a man, it was inappropriate because she was unclean. And then the little girl, the dead little girl. It says so in the Old Testament that you're not supposed to come in contact with the dead body. It makes you unclean. So why would a religious leader go out of his way to come in contact with a dead little girl? Why would Jesus go and get dirty for those people? In all of these cases, the people that Jesus encounters are those that are unacceptable, unlovable, and unwanted. Just like I felt on that first day of school. Just like many of us have felt from time to time in our lives, right? Because I don't care who you are, all of us at some time or another have felt unloved, unwanted, and unacceptable. Right? I mean, look, if Tom Brady walked into Comic-Con, which is like a comic book convention for, you know, people, the cool people there are the ones that dress best like a stormtrooper, okay? But if Tom Brady, famous athlete, walks in there, he's going to be completely out of place. Nobody's going to know who he is. Nobody's going to care that he's a football player because they don't care anything about football. So even the most popular, coolest people in the world, yeah, I know he played for the Patriots, but still, they still have felt out of place. We have all felt at one time or another unacceptable, unloved, and unwanted, haven't we? Whether or not you've been the new kid at school, you've been the new kid at work, or the new kid in church, we've all known what it's like. And so, for those folks, I say this. This passage makes it very clear that with Jesus, you are loved, you are wanted, and you are accepted. But see, That's nice for most of us to hear because, you know, as I'm preaching the sermon, I had to find those rare instances in my life when I felt unloved, unwanted, and unacceptable. Because the truth is, My first day of school was bad. My second day wasn't nearly as bad. And by a week in there, I had tons of friends and knew everybody. Because that's just who I am, you know? I'm not going to stand on the wall my whole life. But there are people that, for them, the rare part is when they do feel loved, wanted, and accepted. They feel like outsiders at work. They feel like outsiders at school. They feel like outsiders in society. They feel like outsiders at church. They feel like outsiders in their homes and even in their own skin. Wherever they go, they feel unwanted, unloved, and unacceptable. How must that feel for them? And so what is our response as the church, as good Christian people that we are? Well, we're kind of like the Pharisees, aren't we? Oh, we show up on Sunday mornings. We do our part. We do what we're supposed to do. We offer our sacrifices. But we're missing the mercy part. The part that God really wants. The part where we see folks out there who are hurting, who are struggling, who feel unloved, unwanted, and unaccepted. And we let them stay right there. But we are called to show mercy. We are called to show them love. Because we are loved. Because we are accepted. Because we are wanted by God. That's our message to the world, my friends. Because you see, Jesus has always sat at the wrong table. And he invites all of us to sit there with him. That's what Holy Communion's all about. We don't have a list of who's in, who's out at communion. We don't have to say, well, you haven't checked this box yet. You haven't done this. You haven't done that. All are welcome here. All are welcome at Jesus' table. That's the kind of God that we have. And that's the kind of God that we follow. Therefore, you and I need to stop being the people that are pushing folks to the outside and be the people that are welcoming them in. Because that's who Jesus is. You see, folks, somewhere along the way, we've decided that these things are political issues. We have all these political issues, but what we're forgetting is these political issues are people. They are human beings with struggles and hopes and dreams and fears and joys and sadness, just like you and me. And just like you and me, they are loved by God. And just like you and me, they are wanted by God. And just like you and me, they are accepted by God. So don't you think we ought to do the same? Don't you think we ought to be the ones reaching out and showing love, showing mercy, and not making them our world's sacrifice? Amen.